Well, here in the U.S., home prices are still on the rise. According to a report this week from S&P Case-Shiller, prices rose 4.7% in the 12 months that ended in November. And if you want to see what's happening to your home value, you might go to the website Zillow. Since it was founded in 2005, it has changed the real estate industry, and its CEO, Spencer Raskoff, has just written a book about it, along with the company's chief economist, Stan Humphries. It's called Zillow Talk, The New Rules of Real Estate. And as we continue our series of conversations with leaders called View from the Top, we're joined now by Spencer Raskoff and Stan Humphries. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, and you write, Spencer, that you created Zillow to turn on the lights and bring transparency to one of our country's most opaque industries. And part of the way that you do that is by providing consumers with this thing that is called a Zestimate. It's an estimate of the value of almost every home in America. How do you get that number? How do you find that Zestimate?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. It's probably what Zillow is best known for. Something like 80% of all homes in America have been Zillowed, have actually had the owner look up their Zestimate on the site. The way we calculate the Zestimate is a very complex algorithm, which Dr. Stan here can explain. But the shorthand is we look at the properties of the subject home and we compare it with like properties. But we do it using machine learning and algorithms, which are very complex. We value every home in the country every night. And nationwide, Zestimates are actually quite accurate, even though they're computer-generated.
How accurate are they?
Well, right now, we religiously update our accuracy on our website. And for the past 3 months, our accuracy was 8% median absolute percent error, which is about twice as good as when we started in 2006, when our accuracy was about 14%. About 85% of Zestimates are within 20% of the selling price, and close to 40% are within 5%.
Although there are a lot of critics, including a real estate agent who wrote in the Washington Post that Zestimates are within 5% of the actual value of the home only half the time, and that if a real estate agent had that record, he'd be out of business. And he complains that a lot of these clients that he has cling to the Zestimate as if it's the official appraisal. I'm sure you've heard that criticism. How do you respond to it?
Well, you know, we call it a Zestimate, not as appraisal. It's supposed to be a starting point to figure out a home's value. If you want a more accurate opinion of your value, you should consult an appraiser or a real estate agent. Zillow provides all this great free information for consumers as a starting point, and the consumer is undoubtedly much more empowered today than 10 years ago before we started, and we think that's very important.
Well, I found one of the interesting things in the book is that you say that you don't think Zillow is going to replace the traditional appraiser. Why is that?
Because real estate is such a personal and expensive and infrequent and emotional transaction, there will always be a professional, an intermediary in the transaction. Now, the role of that professional has changed radically because of the internet and because of Zillow. It used to be, before Zillow came along, that the role of that real estate agent was to provide access to the consumer to that secret database of information. Well, now that secret database is online. It's on your smartphone. It's on your tablet. It's on Zillow. And so the consumer has the same information as the professional, but the consumer still needs the professional's help to help them interpret it. So the real estate agent's role has changed, but their importance has not been diminished.
And you don't think that as data gets even better and your algorithms get even better over time, you won't eventually someday replace the appraiser?
I don't think so. You know, we look at it a lot like healthcare, where a patient nowadays takes control of their health situation. They research online their disease, their drugs, the side effects, etc. But they still go to the doctor to help them interpret the information. And that's the way we see real estate going because it's so infrequent and expensive.
I want to ask you a question that many Americans, maybe every American has, which is whether to buy or to rent. And you write that it really depends on where you are. Stan, can you talk about that? How do you decide whether you should be buying or renting the property that you're in or that you want?
Well, we think that you know, it's a complicated issue because there's certainly a lot of things that go into, you know, buying and renting. Where you think about buying, certainly there are tax benefits, you know, a variety of different costs that go along with home ownership. And then on the renting side, it's a little bit more straightforward, but you've got obviously expectations about what rent prices are going to do in the future, you know, renter's insurance, things like that. And But we kind of boiled all that down, and we think the easiest way that we've come up with to kind of think about that is what we call this break-even horizon, which is this notion of how long do you have to live in a house to make buying more advantageous than renting? Because, you know, I think everyone understands that if you're going to be in a house for 20, 30 years, you should probably buy the house. And if you're going to be in the house for 6 months, you should rent it. What people don't know is kind of where do those two lines cross? And it turns out that it varies in time and in space when those lines cross. So using our big database at Zillow, we crunch those numbers every quarter and compute the break-even horizon, how long you have to live in a house to make buying more advantageous than renting for every city and metro across the country. And what we found was that in most metros right now, the break-even horizon is substantially less than 3 years. And in fact, nationally, it's only 2.3 years.
But of course, there are some cities where it's more than that and some cities where the average is less than that. You compare buying a home and the prices, the home values that we've seen in this country to, for example, the stock market, which brings me to another question. Is a home, do you think, an investment or is it a place that you live?
Well, we think the housing market works best when people think of it not as an investment, so not as a speculative asset, but rather as a utility that you're going to consume. So, you know, I guess we get concerned when home prices appreciate at 12% a year and then the next year they fall 15. That's clearly behavior that is being fueled by people who are thinking of it as a speculative asset. And home prices work best when housing markets are boring and they appreciate 3.5% a year. And what they're really buying it for is it's a convenient way to consume the utility of putting a roof over your head. And if you think about it like that, then we think people end up making smarter decisions versus thinking, you know, getting caught up in hysterias like we had in the height of the last housing cycle, where people think the default decision should always be to buy a home, and they kind of threw everything else out the window, like how long you're going to be in the house, whether home prices might be, you know, a little bit rich relative to historical norms or anything else.
If you're just joining us, we've been talking with Zillow CEO Spencer Raskoff and the company's chief economist, Stan Humphries, about their new book called Zillow Talk, The New Rules of Real Estate. And Spencer, one thing you talk about in the book that I want to ask about is how do you predict, as you look at your data, what the next hot neighborhood is going to be?
We analyzed a lot of different neighborhoods and looked at different housing cycles around the country. And historically, it's actually been quite easy to figure out what the next hot neighborhood was going to be. It's to actually look at where the gay population lives in a given city. And one of the reasons for that is that historically speaking, gays have been priced out of the most expensive parts of the city. And so they move into a different part of the city, which quickly gentrifies and becomes hip and cool and then becomes very expensive pretty rapidly. However, now that gays are much more part of the social mainstream of our country, you can't follow that rule of thumb anymore. And so you have to look for other populations, the hipsters, if you will, the cool kids, and figure out where they're living. But one of the things that we analyzed in Zillow Talk is, although you might think you do best when you buy into one of those hot neighborhoods, you actually don't, because by the time you realize that a neighborhood is hot, it's already happened. And so you'd be better off buying the next closest neighborhood. Those homes are going to appreciate faster than the hot neighborhood. So the misnomer is location, location, location. It's really not the current location. It's what will the location be in 5 or 10 years? And the answer is probably whatever's closest to what's hot today.
You also look at the proximity of Starbucks to where the house is, and that actually makes a very big difference in the value, the potential value of your home.
It does. You know, this is something that was a lot of fun to analyze in the book. So we looked at 17 years worth of data and looked at every Starbucks in the country and every home within a quarter mile of that Starbucks. And homes within a quarter mile of a Starbucks appreciated 96% over those 17 years. If you were within a quarter mile of a Dunkin' Donuts, your home appreciated 80% during that time period.
Also, is that, though, just because of where those companies are putting their businesses? Or is it, like, was the neighborhood there first and they just found a good place to put it? Or is it that people want to live close to a Starbucks?
Yeah, we were interested in that, too, because obviously it is a little bit of a question of, you know, is it that the neighborhood was appreciating quickly in terms of home values, and that's why they decided to put the Starbucks there? What we did actually were able to do with the Starbucks specifically was leverage some data that had been collected by this really kind of Starbucks super fan who had basically compiled a list of every single Starbucks in the world and the latitude and longitude of that Starbucks and then when it opened. And knowing that open date was really important because it then allowed us to do an econometric analysis where we controlled for the prior trajectory of home values in that Starbucks area and then look at what happened in the first 5 years after the Starbucks opened, and did home values increase the pace or decrease the pace. And what we found was that doing an analysis that way, the effect is a little bit less than the 17-year analysis that Spencer described, but there's still a strong effect of living closer to Starbucks. Your home values do appreciate after that Starbucks opens up. So it's
and then
not,
you can afford the coffees that they have at Starbucks.
that's exactly right.
Now, you also talk about renovating your house and remodeling and doing work to upgrade it and whether that's actually worth it. I didn't realize that a kitchen remodel is really not a good idea if you want to try to recoup that money when you sell.
I think that chapter is so emblematic of everything else we tried to do with the book, which was, you know, we have these unexamined assumptions that we just carry around in our heads about real estate and have never asked, you know, where's that data come from? Because it's like each year I see some survey of people about what's going to be the biggest, you know, bang for your buck in a remodel. And it's always kitchen remodel, but it's always a survey. It was never empirical data. So what we did was we leveraged the information about thousands of homeowners who have claimed homes on Zillow and told us about their upgrades. And then subsequently we saw a sale on that house. And we were able to use that data to tease out the impact of that upgrade they told us about. And what we found was that actually kitchen remodel wasn't the biggest bang for the buck. Instead, it was a bathroom remodel. So adding some functionality to the house of a working toilet was actually much more valuable in the resale than upgrading your kitchen.
In particular, a lower-end bathroom remodel because it doesn't have to be gorgeous. And people frequently overbuild on these remodeling projects hoping that they'll get the money out on the other end, and they usually don't.
Why do you think that is, that the kitchen is not as important?
Because buyers have very specific tastes. And so if you remodel your kitchen in a very high-end way and the backsplash that you choose and the tile and the materials on the kitchen island are in a particular way that you really loved, that may or may not meet the needs and the tastes of a particular buyer. Whereas just having another functional bathroom, you know, everybody's going to be okay with that.
I remember my parents telling me that the house that they brought me up in as a kid, that when they bought it, it had been painted on the inside red and black because the previous owner was a doctor and wanted the house to look like the inside of a body or something like that. Needless to say, that was changed. I want to talk to you about some of the words that are used in listings, because this was an interesting part of the book as well, that if a house is described as unique, it's not going to do well.
Yeah, that's right. Unique is something that clearly the current owner liked, but it means that unique should be a signal that it's more of a niche property, and it's probably not going to return as much as it would otherwise. In fact, we found that if you use unique in your listing description, it's likely to sell for 30 to 50% less than it would otherwise.
Wow.
Other words to avoid are nice, charming, cute. These are all kind of throwaway words that sellers or their listing agent, when they don't have anything real to describe about the functionality of the home, they use these throwaway words. And on the other hand, good words to use are things like luxurious, landscaped, captivating, and then describing the specific features of the home is also very helpful.
I want to do a quick lightning round before I let both of you go. Just short answers to these questions, and I'll go to each of you for each of them. But let's start with you, Spencer. What is your near-term prediction for the American real estate market?
Up 3% over the next 12 months. Slow and steady, pretty boring, which is good.
Stan?
Same prediction for home prices, 3%. Healing, slowly getting back to normal, but still pretty far off from normal.
Stan, what do you think the hottest real estate market in the U.S. is right now?
San Francisco.
Spencer?
Manhattan.
And the worst?
Probably Akron.
Poor old Akron.
Are you guys in agreement
Midwest.
On Akron?
I'll defer to Stan.
Okay. And what did you each learn from the huge collapse in housing that happened shortly after Zillow really became a function of the American real estate industry? And I'll start with you, Spencer.
I learned that I wish this type of information that Zillow puts on the web and on smartphones, I wish it existed during the 2005, 2006, 2007 run-up, because a lot of the pain to our economy and to our country and frankly to the world could have been avoided if people had access to more information, if they could have tracked and followed what was happening on the way up. Hopefully we would have been smarter and more informed.
I was really struck by during the housing downturn when we would publish reports on various things about mortgages or negative equity or home prices, and we would get calls from major banks, private equity firms, the Federal Reserve, and say, hey, we would love to find out more about this. And I'm like, well, I would assume you guys already had all this stuff. And they're like, no, we don't have anything like this. So I was really struck by even these people who you would think would have their finger on, the minute pulse of what's happening in the housing market, just had no real intelligence about the details, and not because of their own lack of attention to that, just it wasn't available.
Is wallpaper ever going to come back?
Everything eventually. If you wait long enough, everything comes back.
But you're seeing it in the listings now. That's not a successful term. House filled with wallpaper?
No, we haven't seen that in the data yet. Right. But wait long enough. It'll come back, I'm sure.
Spencer Raskoff, the CEO of Zillow. Stan Humphries is the chief economist. Their new book is called Zillow Talk, The New Rules of Real Estate. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy.